Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Karen Cam Radio Show. The intention of this show is to empower and inspire you to manifest the life of your dreams, whether it's radiant health, prosperity, loving relationships, or simply peace of mind. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Cam, author of the number one bestseller, Guide to Healing Chronic Pain, A Holistic Approach. And, you know, this is very interesting, the show we're going to do today, because this is actually a rescheduled show from one that we had previously. Dr. Kayla Daniel, who is my guest today, she is known as the Naughty Nutritionist. And gosh, you know, I'm looking at her credentials, and she's got a lot of credentials. You know, we're going to be talking about bacon today, which is very controversial. I can definitely tell you, I got people emailing me saying, I don't really believe in eating meat and all this kind of stuff. And these are good, you know, awesome people that I'm, you know, friends with and connected with. So we are going to discuss a little bit about that today. But, you know, Dr. Daniel has a PhD in nutritional sciences and anti-aging therapies from the Union Institute and University in Cincinnati, and certified clinical nutritionist by the International American Association of Clinical Nutritionists in Dallas, and is vice president of the Weston A. Price Foundation, serves on the board of directors of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, which I do actually help to support as well financially. She actually, in 2005, received the Weston A. Price Foundation's Integrity in Science Award. She's co-author of the best-selling book, Nourishing Broth, which is a book that I've given away to people that I love because I'm really into broth and the amazing things. Like, who needs a whole bunch of supplements that you pay big money for? Sometimes broth is enough. So Nourishing Broth, an Old-Fashioned Remedy for the Modern World, and author of The Whole Soy Story. We talked about that on a previous show. And about the dark side of America's favorite health food. Her books have been endorsed by leading health experts, including the famous Russell Blaylock, David Brownstein, Larry Dossey, the late Nicholas Gonzalez, Joseph Mercola. I mean, there's just tons and tons of people. J.J. Virgin, you know, Jonathan Rowe, these famous people. It's amazing. And she's actually been on Dr. Oz and NPR and Discovery Channel. I mean, this is pretty awesome that we have on this show today. But before I introduce Dr. Daniel, I want to address right off the bat this, you know, this controversy. And one of the things is that somebody said, look, I don't believe in eating animal meat. I don't care if it's grass-fed or pasture or whatever. I mean, animals have emotions. You know, they have if you slaughter their herd, they feel that. And so they don't want to eat meat for that reason. I totally want to say I honor you, you know, for that. And I do believe truly that the energetics of the food does depend on the intention, not only of the farmers that are raising the animals, but also of the people caretaking them, also of the people eating them. And I have to say that because I see people with burnout, with adrenal burnout, a lot of them are very, very sick, ungrounded. Now, of course, with the kind of muscle testing that I do, I can really very easily hone in how grounded they are, how happy their chakras are, you know, and their bodies will tell me, not me telling them, but their bodies, their subconscious will tell me whether or not they need to eat meat for their physical, mental, emotional health. And for a lot of people that have been sick, end up with adrenal fatigue, they come to my office, their bodies do say, yeah, I need you to eat red meat, at least for now. And that's their body telling them, not me per se. And even I went through the same thing where there was a point where I was really wanting to do the whole vegetarian thing and the soy thing, which I thought was really good back then. And at that point, I was very stressed out. My marriage was, you know, crumbling. And I just, you know, was getting sicker and weaker and just feeling horrible and gaining weight. And at that point, it was like, yeah, give me a piece of steak, you know what I mean? And I need to eat that. And what's really interesting now is that my body's changing and the vibration of my body is shifting with the earth's vibration as well. And recently when I did my own muscle test, I was shocked to find out that my body actually wants less land animals, more sea animals, and actually less animals products overall. And it just dawned on me, oh my gosh, we have all this amazing nutritional information. There is no question that meat is some of the most nutrient, if not the most nutrient dense food on the planet. And if you're not grounded and if your body is falling apart, your adrenals are gone, I'm sorry, but if you want your body to survive, you probably have to eat meat for a while, at least until you get your body back on track, back grounded. And then like me, you know, when your vibration is now grounded, increasing at the same time that it's grounded, then maybe your body's going to be, hey, I really want the light foods now. And that's why, you know, angelic healers like Doreen Virtue say we want it cleaner. We want, you know, less of this emotional baggage, you know, from the animals and that kind of thing in our diet. We want more plant food. And in the past, our ancient DNA wouldn't let us do that. We wouldn't be able to get pregnant, you know. But I got a neighbor up the street who has 4 kids now, and she's vegetarian. I'm like, seriously? Like, wow, that's awesome. You know, but I think our bodies are changing, but sometimes you cannot make your body into a certain way if it's not ready. So I think the trend is probably going towards lighter foods, but I'm still a very much proponent of traditional foods because some people really do need that nutrient density. And today's, you know, talk about bacon. Right now, my body's resonating at bacon once a week. And that's it. I mean, I used to eat it every day just because it felt good and that's what my body wanted. And right now it doesn't want that. So I'm just going to honor that that's where my body's at. And so for everyone, it's going to be different. There's no absolute right or wrong. And for those people that do, you know, choose to eat meat for their health and wellness, be conscious and intentional in that and bless your food. Thank where your food came from. Thank the animals. Thank the plants. You think plants don't have consciousness? You think they don't have emotions? How do you know that? I mean, Clive Baxter and his experiments show that, yeah, they can adopt emotions, and they know when you're coming to get them. So it's like, well, if you believe you have to eat something to sustain yourself, why not choose what you need, but also appreciate and have gratitude and bless and ask the angels and the higher level beings to, you know, to bless your food. And those emotions, you can transform those. Those can be healed. You do not have to take on the cortisol or the negative stuff of the animals you eat. That's a belief that now no longer needs to be there because that can be transformed. So I really wanted to address that for the folks that have emailed me and where it's all this whole controversy about it. So let's check in and see if Dr. Daniel is here. Sorry, that was a big, long conversation. But let's check in and let's see. I've got a phone number ending in 3252, so I'm hoping that's Dr. Daniel. Let's unmute this person and make sure. Dr. Daniel?
Hi, Dr. Khan.
Yay! Okay. Sorry, I didn't see your hand up, so I wanted to make sure it was you. But, so that now you know, you're like, oh, wow, I had no idea we were going to talk about this today. But that's the kind of the context of the folks emailing me, you know, I'm sure, I mean, you are the naughty nutritionist. You deal in controversy. You're good
yes,
at that.
Yes, I tell.
Yeah.
I tell the truth. It's too hot to handle.
Yeah, exactly. And in a funny way. And so I really appreciate you. And if you have some, you know, feedback on, you know, what I've said just now, just a whole about the whole energetics and, I know, you know, your expertise is not in spiritual energy medicine, but at the same time, you know, it's about wellness and healing. So I would love your perspective, even before we talk about bacon, as far as, you know, meat, no meat, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, certainly meat is eaten in many, many spiritual and religious traditions. It's a sacred food for Native Americans. The Dalai Lama eats meat. And many, many others do. I think what's really, really important is that we take care to get the meat of animals that have been treated very humanely, and that is good for personal and planetary health as well.
Mm-hmm. And we actually interviewed Liara Keith earlier last year just about her book, The Vegetarian Myth, and how a lot of kids that I see, especially, you know, they'll see the movie Food, Inc. and totally get turned off meat because that is awful, the whole conventional meat processing, you know, plant. It really is an awful system. So they turn to vegetarianism. What happens is they go and they buy all this boxed and bagged food. So they're like, oh, I'm going to eat crackers and nachos and, you know, power bars, and that's their version of vegetarian food, which is not particularly healthy. And Lierre was talking about, hey, do you really know what's going on in our land? You know, are you really conscious of where your vegetables come from and how that does not necessarily mean you're doing better for the planet if you're vegetarian, if you're not conscious of these things? So I thought that was really fascinating. So, yeah, so thank you, though, for, you know, for saying what you just did.
Well, I certainly, in regard to bacon, I am not recommending supermarket bacon with the factory farm pigs, with the added MSG, with ingredients like liquid smoke. I mean, does that sound suspicious and dubious? So definitely recommending quality products, bacon from pastured pigs.
Yeah. So what is it about, we've been told, you know, bacon's bad for our health, it clogs our arteries, saturated fat's bad. Of course, you know, there's all these, you know, things teaching us now that it's actually necessary for our health. But you can kind of, you know, give us from foundational basics, what is it about bacon that you would actually recommend this to some of your clients?
Well, there's a long, long history of meat being considered delicious but dangerous. And if we go back to the 19th century, there was the whole connection of red meat with being a carnivore and having carnal knowledge. So meat was very connected with sex. So vegetarian diets were being promoted as an aid to people being celibate. So that's how it actually got started, with some crazy guys like John Harvey Kellogg. And what's really funny now is that the whole meaning of vegetarianism has shifted, and organizations like PETA would have us believe that that's the sexiest way to be. But vegetarian diets really took off as part of a movement to stop people from having sex.
Interesting.
So part of that whole delicious but dangerous idea.
Oh, interesting. Wow. And do you know of any societies, tribal, traditional, you know, spiritual societies who, you know, just eat, you know, vegetables or don't eat meat at all? Or just curious. You probably know the history more than I do, so.
Well, not voluntarily. Dr. Weston A. Price traveled to many places in the world, and it was his great hope that he would find a culture where people were living and living very healthfully on plant foods alone. And it was the great disappointment of his life that he never did find that. And he actually found that there were cultures trying to do so, and they were doing very poorly. So this was very sad for him. And there's a whole lot of books out that promote the idea that the plant-based diet people are the healthiest in the world. But when you really look at the eating patterns in those countries, there's always at least some animal foods. So there's never been a culture that has voluntarily been vegan anywhere.
What about I know we talked about this in the soy, but for the people that did not listen to that show, what about the Okinawans that are supposedly very vegetarian or more vegetarian?
They eat some soy every day, but their primary preferred protein is actually pork, and they use a lot of monounsaturated fat or lard, which is very similar to bacon fat in terms of its health benefits. And that's the primary monounsaturated fat in their diet. It is lard. So the popular diet books have changed that into canola, as if the 100-year-old people in Okinawa were growing up on canola, when in fact canola is a genetically modified rapeseed oil invented in Canada just a few decades ago. So the true monounsaturated fat they were using was lard.
Now, well, how much of this fat were they actually, the healthy Okinawans, eating? Like, how much animal meat were they actually eating, or are they actually eating, the healthy people?
I wouldn't say they were eating excessively, but it was certainly what they preferred, and the fat they were using was primarily the lard. And they had a rich and varied diet, and yes, it included modest amounts of tofu and other old-fashioned soy foods as well. So that's one of the main points. You know, rich and varied diet tends to not get people into trouble.
Right. If you eat the same thing every day, then it can get you into trouble. You'll have some.
When people start believing something is a miracle food, like, say, soy, and they have soy milk and soy energy bars and soy shakes and one-pound blocks of tofu and bags of edamame,
that miracle
food becomes a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
And likewise, I want to be clear, even though I enjoy bacon and often several times a week, I'm not on a bacon diet.
Right. And so assuming, you know, we get the pork from, you know, humanely treated bacon, and actually that's it's interesting that I didn't even realize until I bought this particular brand of bacon from the health food store, that it has a stamp, certified humane. I'm like, wow, there's a certification for that? That's kind of neat. And it's say I'll go to the grocery store or the health food store, and I will literally muscle test each of those meats. If I do not have a strong muscle test, I don't buy it. And this particular brand was a yes, which was fascinating to me. And so that's the one we get. And so assuming that you get this, what are the so-called health benefits of eating bacon, and how should we cook it to get those health benefits?
Well, there's a lot of aspects to bacon that make it that make a good bacon healthy for us. To start with, its primary acid is fat, and I know fat still scares some people, but I want to point out that 50% of the fat in bacon is monounsaturated, and that's what is the chief virtue of, say, olive oil. And the 50% monounsaturated is why when you pour off the fat from cooking bacon and pour it into a cup and keep it on your counter, why it's soft but it doesn't get hard. That's a sign of a monounsaturated fat. And 40% of the fat in bacon is saturated. Now, a lot of people are scared of saturated fats, but one of the things that's an advantage about saturated fat is it does not go rancid easily. And the biggest danger with fats and oils is rancidity. And bacon fat is not likely to go rancid, so that's actually a very a good asset to it. It's stable.
Gotcha. We actually have one of these crocks on our, when we do bacon, we pour off the fat and we keep it in this crock, and it's amazing how long it keeps it. It never smells or tastes rancid, whereas I've tried sometimes other fats like duck fat. I notice that you definitely cannot keep it on the counter. That will go rancid very quickly, even though it's from an animal.
Yes, the bacon fat keeps well, and many of us remember grandparents and aunts and uncles keeping a can of such fat on the countertop, and that was part of the frugality that they practiced, and also they just instinctively knew this was good. So besides the health benefits of that fat, it makes everything taste better. You know, there's a saying, bacon makes everything better.
Yeah.
And you can use that fat for so many things. If you consider, say, dark greens to be a health food, and they are, in my opinion, one of the healthiest vegetables, cook them in bacon fat or cook them in butter. The fat is what makes them really digestible, really delicious, and helps us absorb all the vitamins from that.
I read that recently about how important the fat is to be able to absorb the nutrients from your greens.
Yeah, people talk about how it's so hard to feed their children vegetables. Well, the secret is plenty of butter or bacon fat, or some people would like both, and it becomes delicious. It's not hard to feed children vegetables when they taste good like that.
Okay.
And not hard to feed us.
Well, what about this whole cholesterol, fatty acid profile? You know, people sometimes get, you know, their omegas all like, oh, I have too much omega-3 or too much omega-6. One of my patients recently was trying to do the ketogenic diet for her adrenal issues, and for a while there she was doing it, and then her body said, no, I don't need all that fat anymore. But she's like, oh, my gosh, I'm eating too much omega-3s. I was like, wow, really? I mean, how possible is that? But she was eating all the saturated fat and really no other kinds of fat. So how does bacon, you know, play into all that that fat balance?
Well, we've learned that the science on saturated fat and cholesterol is that these are healthy for us. The body needs cholesterol. Cholesterol is what we need to feed the roots of our hormone trees. So cholesterol is in the roots. And if we want proper balance and levels of estrogen and testosterone and also all the mood hormones, we do want cholesterol. And most of the studies that have indicated cholesterol as a problem for people were done with oxidized cholesterol, and that's what you find in many processed foods. But that's not likely to happen in your home kitchen. And as I already mentioned, saturated fats are very unlikely to go rancid, and our body really needs them. They need them in cholesterol for our healthy cell membranes, for brain cells, for everything. And that just go ahead.
Oh, sorry, no, my uncle, one of my uncles had a couple of heart attacks, and he's you know, his lifestyle is what the average person would consider very healthy. He doesn't overeat, wasn't overweight, he exercised all the time, he never hardly ever ate processed food. He did, you know, work in a dental office with tons of mercury, but so there was, I'm sure, inflammation there. But even he said, I'm not too sure I really want to take this cholesterol medication. I think he refused it because he said, look, your brain is mostly saturated fat, and I'm not sure this is a good thing to try to get rid of my saturated fat or lower my cholesterol. And so I thought that was really interesting, even coming from someone who's not like a health nut.
Well, the cholesterol for a dentist would be very protective against all that mercury. And in fact, all of us have a certain level of heavy metal toxicity, mercury, lead, aluminum, etc., as part of the modern world. But getting back to the question of, say, bacon for being good for the heart, well, first of all, it's good for us to be happy, and people enjoy bacon. It makes everything better. It's delicious. We feel full. We don't feel deprived. We can feel very happy. And happiness right there is good for the heart. But the monounsaturated fat in bacon is known to be good for the heart. And also bacon has a good quantity of the fat-soluble vitamin D. And so many people are deficient in that. And bacon and bacon fat from pastured pigs has a really nice level of good vitamin D.
Wow. Do we have some idea like how that would translate? Like, because a lot of people say, well, I'm in the North Country, I have to take 5,000 international units of vitamin D to get my vitamin D levels decent. Like, how much bacon would that be?
Well, it's about 250 to 300 I use per 100 grams. And 100 grams would be about 3.5 ounces or a fifth of a pound. So people might want to also eat other things that contain vitamin D, of course, but that's giving us a nice start.
Okay, I see. Well, some of the people that have been trying to be more healthy and trying to do, that I see anyway in the office, trying to do more, what they thought was healthier, more vegetarian, less red meat, that's what their doctors told us, they're coming with some blood pressure issues and sleep issues and anxiety issues. So are these things that you would commonly see in people that don't have enough saturated fat or cholesterol in their diet?
Well, certainly people are more anxious if their brain's not being fed well. Our brains are about 60% fat, and if we're either not getting enough fat or we're feeding ourselves rancid fats, the brain's going to suffer. So there's definitely anxiety issues with people on low-fat diets and also with high-sugar diets. And usually if you're low-fat, you're filling up on something, and whether it's actual sugar or starchy carbs, you're still going to have blood sugar problems, ups and downs, and that can lead to anxiety. It can lead to depression. It can lead to mood swings. So many people are living in a state of deprivation and feelings of lack. And if we have good food in our diet that fills us and satisfies us and helps make us happy, it's a good start.
Right. Yes. I thank you for reiterating the part about the feeling happy, and that is the trend that I kept seeing, was that the mood swings the anxiety, and you know, and I sent them to our local, you know, a clinical nutritionist who's very holistic and trying to honor, you know, their desires to be healthy. You know, for some people, they didn't have like a moral or, you know, reason for not eating meat. They just thought it was healthier, and so for them, once they shifted their diet and actually ate more red meat and more saturated fat, which they thought was evil before, but then, you know, was taught that no, it wasn't. It really has stabilized their mood, and they're much more grounded. In this particular case, this one person, her blood pressure is just a lot better. I mean, we would muscle test, and I'm like, there's something with your diet that's related to your blood pressure. And so I sent her to the nutritionist. Nutritionist gave some suggestions. We would muscle test all those different things, and we followed whatever she was strong with. She changed her diet, and she says, oh, my God, I have not eaten this much meat in decades, but I feel better, you know. And then so her blood pressure went under control, and I thought, wow, that is really quite fascinating. So what you're saying, you know, really bears out, at least clinically in my office, you know, people that I end up seeing.
Well, in terms of vegans, it's better to, if they're coming around, not to plan to preach to them, but just
right.
put on some bacon, because the smell will suck them in every time.
No way.
And they call it the gateway meat. So don't talk about it. Just cook bacon.
Oh, that's too funny. Well, and I do notice that, you know, I do have some friends. I mean, not that I counsel at all. They're not really sick. I mean, they're some of them are pretty hardy. And one in particular, a new friend of mine, a friend of a friend, has at some point just decided his body just didn't want meat anymore. And he's doing fine. I mean, in terms of there's nothing wrong with him that, you know, that most doctors could find. But the only telltale sign that there's an imbalance is the intense sugar cravings. Stop eating sugar. And so it's like, you know, this is not someone who I counsel, so I don't feel like I have the right to say, look, if it really was balanced, he's a wonderful cook too. I mean the vegetarian stuff he made, not processed food, none of that crappy stuff. He cooks really amazing vegetarian food. But I want to say, look, you've got a humongous sugar addiction. Don't you think that possibly your body's missing something? You know, and that's why I'm not saying you have to eat meat. I'm just saying, just think about it. You know, that's what I'd really like to say to him. So I think that, but I do believe that at some point, you know, our bodies do shift. And, you know, I saw this film recently called Eat Sun, and it wasn't like, you know, there was some controversy in the film too, which I really appreciated. This guy, I think, is in Vermont who did this movie, and there was documenting this Indian guy that did not eat. He did not eat for 10 months or however many months they tested him for. They locked him in a room, you know, and they wouldn't let him eat. He said he only drank coffee and water, and he was fine. I mean, they couldn't find anything wrong with him. They did blood tests, x-rays, I mean, whatever. He just ate the sun. He was able to convert, like a plant, the sun energy. Obviously, we can't do that overnight, but I think that opened my mind as to, wow, okay, this is, you know, documented, you know, scientifically documented that possibly our energetic body could change so we're not as dependent on denser animal foods. But you know, people that are sick and their bodies are not doing well, oftentimes they're not going to be able to tolerate that amount of, you know, low-fat stuff. And talking about the brain, you mentioned about the saturated fat being 60% of the brain. Now, a lot of people will say, well, I heard that the brain eats sugar. That's its sugar nutrition. It eats glucose. So can you give us enlightenment on, you know, what the brain actually needs then?
The brain definitely needs the right kinds of fats, and we definitely need a rich and varied diet to feed not only our brain but our whole body with what it really needs. And I think there's a substantial amount of research indicating that the impact of sugar on brain and body is very destructive. And all of us can have a small amount of sugar, and most of us can do okay with it, but many, many people are eating far more sugar than they would ever guess. And our brains and bodies did not evolve to have that much sugar.
So our brains, do our brains actually use fat as a fuel?
The brain needs fat in multiple ways, from the way the cells the cells are built in the brain and just many, many, many things.
Okay. Well, and what about, people say, well, I prefer doing coconut oil because there's some saturated fat in coconut oil. So could somebody completely replace, theoretically speaking, their animal saturated fat with coconut oil and get the same benefit?
I certainly recommend coconut oil. And for many people who insist on staying vegans, I at least tell them to get on the coconut oil because then they'll have a good source of healthy saturated fat, and that's going to help them. They still, unfortunately, need cholesterol, and they also need the advanced fatty acids, omega-3 fatty acids, EPA and DHA, which we can get from fish or fish oils or fish liver oils. So there are certain fats that we can only obtain from, and that's important.
So from your point of view, as far as our current physiology for the average human being, we still need those omega-3s and cholesterol, which only is supplied by animal products. Am I hearing you right?
We need cholesterol, which is only found in animal foods, and we need the advanced form of omega-3s, which are known as EPA and DHA. Now, theoretically, the body can manufacture those from something like flax oil, which is rich in omega-3s. But in practice, most people are not healthy enough, and they're not able to do that successfully. So almost all of us need to do that by including EPA and DHA-rich foods, either in a diet, in the diet, or our supplement plans.
Oh, I see. And my understanding, too, is that pastured land animals have omega-3s or the beneficial omega-3s, because I always think of fish because that's what's advertised, but I didn't realize that, land animals can also have omegas. Is that true?
It's true, and the fatty acid profile changes with the quality animals. The pastured animals have better ratios as well as more nutritional density. So that becomes really important.
Oh, nutritional density, right. Okay. Well, when I went to the clinical nutritionist, she looked at my fat profile, and she's like, I think, she actually said, I believe your monounsaturated fat isn't enough. So she was saying, well, why don't we try some olives? And then I ended up that I was at least briefly intolerant of olives. I couldn't do that. And then avocados, which I love. So I was like very happy to eat that. But what was interesting was I actually ate bacon. So if you're saying that there was quite a bit of monounsaturated fat in bacon, that was kind of something that I didn't actually realize that I probably was getting. Maybe not.
Yes, you can.
I don't know.
You can get it from bacon, and that's probably the most enjoyable way to do it.
Yeah, and it really does flavor everything. Even the traditional Chinese, maybe not as old a tradition as the Weston A. Price, Dr. Price had tested, but in the more recent, traditional Asian cultures, anytime they wanted to sweeten or make a broth or soup or whatever it is better or taste better, they would use some sort of, their version of bacon or some sort of pork, which I thought was fascinating. And that's just, my mom would say, oh, yeah, we put a pork leg or whatever in there, and that's what makes the soup taste so good. And it did, it was amazing. We really kind of been, in our society against, eating meat and pork. And there are other societies, now that we're on the whole pork thing, there are other societies that don't believe in eating pork for cultural reasons, but is it possible there's safety reasons for pork not being part of, say, the Muslim diet or some of the other traditional cultures?
I think that's a part of it. And we've all heard that pork should be cooked well, and I think that's certainly true.
So I like my bacon crispy, which might not be what you're recommending. So how should we cook our bacon so that it's the most beneficial and the safest?
Well, if you like yours crispy, you're going to have more fat to use for other purposes. If you like your bacon softer, you're going to have more fat when you're actually eating the bacon strips. So it's going to work out either way.
Oh, okay, okay. So is there any harm in making the bacon crispy?
I don't think there's any harm until you've actually burned it. You don't really want to eat burned food.
Right, because that'll cause the whole fat profile to be rancid and free radicals and the whole bit. Okay, so I actually end up cooking my bacon more on a low, medium temperature. It takes longer to cook, but I don't want to get to that smoke point, right, where it's smoking.
Right.
Okay, good. And the whole stabilized blood sugar thing, that is just in the recent 5 years that I kind of figured that out, because my blood sugar used to be like all over the place, and that's when I was trying to be healthy. So I was trying to eat more, you know, soy and vegetables and cutting out the fat, because that's what we were told in medical school. And I would have to eat, I swear, every 2 hours I had something in my purse. Just ask my ex-husband. He'd be like, feed the woman. She's a bear right now, you know. But since changing my diet and kind of helping my adrenals end up eating what my body wanted, which was just more fat, you know, more fat and more meat, you know, especially when I was repairing from my fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue. And, you know, I had some energy tools that really helped me to stabilize, you know, my energy production. It's amazing. I can get away with 3 square meals a day and not be, like, starving and just shaky and trying to reach for something. So for me personally, I mean, it's been a huge improvement to actually just own up to say, hey, this is what my body wants and needs.
Well, it's been a big part of evolution, you know, small belly, big brain. And we think about animals like cows, and they are vegetarian. They're grazing all day. And people who try to be on a plant-based diet, they're constantly eating at small meals and snacks and grazing, because they're always hungry. Their body is craving. And as you found yourself, most of us who are having a rich and varied diet that includes animal products are getting more fat and protein. And we can go from one meal to the next. And we're going to reach a point where, yes, we're hungry, and it's time for another meal.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And, well, we have a question about turkey bacon here, about, you know, I don't want to, for whatever reason, religiously don't want to eat pork. What about turkey bacon? Is that at all any better or worse than real bacon?
Well, I'll address that and also say soy bacon. And the way I would put it as a naughty nutritionist is, what does it take to turn a turkey into a pig? Or even worse, what does it take to turn a soybean into a pig? And the answer to that is a whole lot of additives and flavorings and MSG and other dubious ingredients. And if you look at the list of ingredients, even with the health food store versions of, say, turkey bacon and soy bacon, a long list of unhealthy, dubious ingredients.
Okay, gotcha. Well, I believe that Weston A. Price had this one article, which I actually linked to in my book, Guide to Healing Chronic Pain, A Holistic Approach, about the study they did with people that were on traditional diets, were very healthy, and they were comparing marinated and unmarinated pork and also lamb as a control. You might be familiar with that that study. And that they found that with the unmarinated bacon, that their live blood analysis showed that their red blood cells were clumping together, whereas the marinated bacon, the ones with marinated with either sugar overnight or raw apple cider vinegar, that the blood didn't show that. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, it had to do with marinated pork. So like with pork chops or with a pork as opposed to bacon, because the way bacon is made already takes care of most of those potential problems.
Right, because it's kind of already not marinated. Well, it is sort of marinated, but it doesn't seem to clump the blood cells like unmarinated pork does. And I actually had a physical reaction to Christmas dinner that one of my in-laws made. And it was her roommate made this wonderful, you know, pork roast thing on the stove. And I thought nothing of it until, you know, 20 minutes later, I started, like, my fibromyalgia pain started kind of coming. And I pretty much had to leave and didn't want to be rude to say, hi, I'm in pain. So I left, and I'm, you know, using my acupuncture patches and patching myself, and the hotel room felt better. And then my husband said, you know, I think it was the pork. And I'm like, what? And he goes, remember you told me about the pork being unmarinated, and maybe your body doesn't like that. And I was like, oh, yeah, maybe, because I wouldn't normally eat that at home. So I kind of forgot about the whole, you know, thing, how it changes something in the pork, so it was more tolerable for me.
Yeah, and it could have been other ingredients, and it could have been factory farm pork, just
right.
So many possible factors.
Right, exactly. And if you're just joining Dr. Kayla Daniel and the Naughty Nutritionist and I talking about the health benefits of bacon, you want to weigh in on your opinion, you can give us a call in for the next few minutes. The number to call in is 818-514-1190. 818-514-1190, and just hit 1 so we know that your hand is up and you have a question. So, Dr. Kayla, can you tell us what is how people can get a hold of you, if you do any private consults, and what your website is? If you could tell us all that now, that'd be great.
Sure. My main website is drkayladaniel.com. And if you're interested in my work on broth, there's a second website, nourishingbroth.com. And I'm the co-author with Sally Fallon Morell of the book Nourishing Broth, An Old-Fashioned Remedy for the Modern World.
Oh, great.
And speaking
actually,
of the pork and bacon issue, that can make you the most amazing soup. And now that it's fall and we're moving into winter and it's colder, think of the possibilities of wonderful bean soups made with a ham hock or with a little added bacon and so forth.
Okay, yeah, that does sound good. That's great. And I know this isn't the topic for today, but somebody mentioned to me, because I was recommending the Nourishing Broth book, and they looked up, they said, well, you know, I'm concerned about monosodium glutamate, and my mom, she wasn't sure about the whole MSG thing, but she said in the pass along wisdom from, you know, parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, that kind of thing. So only several generations, was that you don't want to cook bones too long because it's unhealthy. And I'm like, why would they say that? So I'm wondering whether it's a whole MSG thing or something else. I'm just curious what, you know, the traditional diets that you guys have researched, you know, where would that come from?
Well, first of all, if you're concerned about MSG, the place you're going to find it for sure is in canned and packaged soups in the stores, even at stores like Whole Foods, because even the so-called organic broths include things like autolyzed yeast extract and natural flavorings, which are code words for MSG. So those products do contain MSG in one form or another to enhance the flavor and make it more appealing to people. So that's an argument right there for making your own broth at home. Now, in terms of long-cooked versus short-cooked broth, the long-cooked broth will have more nutrition, and it will have greater levels of amino acids, including the amino acid glutamine. Now, glutamine is not the same as MSG, and I want to be totally clear about that. We need glutamine desperately. It's very important for our bodies and brains. But there are some people who are sick, and autistic children among them, who don't tolerate high levels of glutamine. So for them, a shorter cooked broth will do better. And hopefully as they heal their leaky guts and they start to heal their brain, they can tolerate the longer cooked broth, which is going to have more nutrition.
Ah, I see. So if someone, say not necessarily autistic child, but say an adult who knows they have a reaction when they go to the Chinese food, you know, restaurant and get MSG, would they necessarily need to be cautious of making bone broth for, say, 24, 48 hours themselves, with worried about this reaction?
Well, there's various ways they could test that theory out. They could start with short cooked broth and see how it goes, and then increase the time and see if it's still good. Or they could just test some well cooked broth that, say, a chicken broth cooked 8 hours or a beef broth cooked 24 hours or 48 hours, and if they react, just don't do it again. or don't do it for a while. Try to do some healing and then maybe try it again later on.
Gotcha.
They should not assume they're necessarily going to have a problem. I mean, there's plenty of problems with cheap Chinese food. And it may not be just the MSG. There might be multiple factors.
Right, even genetically modified, you know, cornstarch and whatever else is in there. That is true. Yeah, GMO soy. That's true. So Dr. Daniel's website, again, everyone, is drkayladaniel.com. That's spelled DrkayladaNiel, all one word, .com. Lots of great information there. And the other website is nourishingbroth.com, and that's that best-selling book that Dr. Daniel and Sally Fallon Morrell created together. Wonderful resource. And it's been a delight to have you on the show today, Dr. Kayla. Thank you so much for your time and your wisdom. And I just love picking your brain. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. And thanks, everyone, for listening in. Until next time, take care, everyone, and happy eating.